And now to provide an office market update, please welcome Dirk Moses, Managing Director of USAA's Office Development Program. He oversees the company's office development as well as focuses on value-add commercial real estate assets. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks very much, Richard, Gabriel, Alan, for allowing USAA to be a part of this. And it's always a pleasure. How many USAA members are in the audience here? What do we got? That's good. It's pretty good. I would have actually thought it would be higher, but that's good. Just give you a little bit of context so get a sense of where this short presentation comes from. USAA, United Services Automobile Association, founded in 1922 in San Antonio by some Army officers who could not get car insurance. They were bad risks. And that grew from 1922 to today to $210 billion company that has 11 million members. It's member, it's private, it is owned by the member. The member has served in the U.S. military. One of the agencies are their dependents. So of all the members, we really appreciate your service or your dad, mom's service, and you're here. The parent invests in stocks, bonds, and real estate. So we're the real estate group. And they've got stocks and bond guys, so that means we generally need to have higher returns to stay in business, or otherwise they really don't need us, or they'll go buy, you know, REIT stocks. So what I'm going to go through here for a few minutes is on the office side and what we see. Kind of interesting coming in, and you guys get these flyers as well, you know, from CoStar, where office market continues to improve, you know, employment change is growing. Office rents rise amid increased demand for service sector, CBs, large blocks decline downtown amid decreasing occupancy costs, Transwestern's recovery taking hold, all very positive news. And we would concur with that in the market. It's not easy, it's a lot of hard work, but we're seeing the opportunities and some on the acquisition, but a lot more on the development. And most of this will relate to the development. Did it, there we go. The slides, any of these were recorded, but if you want to plagiarize and take them, let us know, stop by the booth. We'll give you a koozie as well as, you know, how to get these slides. And David Reels, our investment director here in Chicago, he's with us, and Josh Cook, my right-hand guy in San Antonio, and Kirk King. If you have any industrial questions, please ask Kirk, don't ask me. So, you know, he'll be there as well. What we're seeing is just the office using employment growth. It is growing. A lot of these slides here, they've been updated, but about really almost 3 years ago, we started to feel from hearing from development partners, hearing from the tenant rep brokers, a lot of you out there in the audience, we're starting to see some increase or some need for office. And we started to look at a couple of markets. We actually looked at Seattle, we looked at Charlotte, just to drill down on a couple and say, is this something, that four-letter word spec, that we would start to use or consider? And we were seeing the employment growth, see population growth. And here when you see the fundamentals, where you look at the blue line being completions, net absorption, and then the vacancy numbers, that just starts to tell you that maybe it is time to bring new product online. If you look at the national office vacancy rates by class and location, modern class A CBD versus class A CBD, you know, is removing left to right, and then obviously class BC suburban is pretty high actually. Yesterday, Gabriel's session, it was a very interesting topic start to bring up on the obsolescence of suburban. And Newmark had an article out, which is really quite good, a white paper, Suburban Office Obsolescence. And a bit of an eye-opener, something you kind of feel, but you start to look into it between location, floor plates, lack of amenities, parking, any one of those, you start to go, is that space ever going to be leased again, or how could you refit it, or is it just going to get repriced? When we started looking at this a couple of years ago in select markets, what we found was, yeah, some of these markets, we ought to go spec. And we have done that in Seattle. We're doing it in San Jose. And really, San Jose, it's really almost, that site is actually closer to Santa Clara. Phoenix, Dallas, San Antonio. I'm leaving somewhere out, but Josh will correct me in a second. But so we start saying, let's do some spec and get it out there. Also, so why are we doing that? We look at the vacancy rates. Class A office, what does that Class A office really mean? For us, for USAA, that's not for everybody. Ours is not necessarily an iconic tower, which is great in certain markets. Not if somebody brought us something in Manhattan, we would strongly consider that. But we're looking more at the 30,000 foot floor plate. Could be 50,000, Z shape or a wedge core in the center. A lot of light, and generally, unless it's just absolute pure call center, got to put it near an amenity base with the current. I'll say the word millennial. There's no millennials in here anyway, because no SIR guys are millennials. They're all too old to be millennials, you know. So I can say that okay in here. I just hate that word, as Josh knows. So you see where the Class A office is taking, I say disproportionate. It's taking its more than its fair share of the absorption. The office construction, this is sort of a turn on what Jeremy had on his slide as well, but if you look at the completions in the dark blue line and then what percent of the stock, you know, it would be no surprise what's going on in Houston. It got out ahead. And as bad as it sounds now, for anybody who's been through a few of these cycles, I know some of you, it's not nearly as bad as what it's been through the last couple of cycles. And that Houston economy is more well diversified, and we're actually going to investment committee here in the next couple of weeks with an 80% pre-lease, 170,000-180,000 foot building in Houston, non-energy company lead tenant going in there. So Houston, it's struggling a little bit right now, but it's definitely not doing that badly. But then even in Austin, somebody mentioned today all the cranes that are there in Austin. There are a lot of cranes. A lot of those cranes are multifamily. The office construction is behind kind of that what would be the normal percentage of stock used as a metric. The this transaction volume, it's a little bit hard to see, but you can see where who's buying the property between individual portfolio and entity. This is primarily just to show you that it is increasing. There is that capital. And, you know, where is the capital coming from? For USAA, for the real estate company, two lines of business. We either acquire existing assets or we provide capital to developers for ground-up development. On our acquisitions, 99% of the time of what we acquire, we have partners, open-end funds, closed-end funds, separate account, et cetera. We have a number of foreign investors, Dutch, German, Canadian, Middle Eastern, Korean, as well as our domestic. Most of those investors, for the most part, are looking more yield. They're looking for good, steady cash flow. We're not super core buyers. A core and something that we can get a little bit of bump, a little bit of smart movement, re-tenanting, repositioning the product. We don't heavily levered. If you look at 12 billion assets under management with the real estate company, we were just under 50% levered. For the members in here, just under $3 billion of that is your money in there, and the other $3 billion is from our co-investors. This shows you where you would think it would be coming from. Canada, and obviously here recently, Norway's coming in a big way, Germany. So this is a lot of our sources. We have, to date, invested strictly until 2 years ago in the lower 48. That was where we could find our returns. We continue to find them. David Buck, I know some of you know, head of our logistics, works with Kirk King. He is in Amsterdam last couple of years, and we've started warehouses in Slovakia, Poland, Czech Republic, getting ready in Germany, and in the UK, Ireland, and elsewhere. That is taking off very well, very positive. And our normal model is we go in, we figure it out, we start to build it, and then we start to bring in co-investors later. And that's where it'll go. But that entry into Europe, which Europe's returns aren't what, here in the U.S., there are recovering countries there. They still have to deal with Greece and Spain and Portugal, et cetera. They've got issues, but there are spots there that are we look very, very positive to. Additionally, our investors that invest here in the U.S. with us, if we invest a little something back over there, they'll invest even more with us here in the U.S. And we sort of joke about it, and talking with some of you, I know, we look and say, you know, how screwed up things are politically, the economy, why don't we feel better here in the U.S. about we're coming out of this recovery, we've been coming out of it for quite a while. Compare the rest of the world looks at us, we are the best, still the best place to put their money is here in the U.S. and putting it in hands of people like you to turn their capital, hands down. That's what they tell us. The CBD office pricing in the major markets has diverged from the pack. You can see that return, what's happening, you know, on the pricing index and that spread, what you're getting from a CBD product. Maybe not a surprise, but when I look at this and put it all on one piece of paper, it validates what we get so granular down and trying to get a deal done, et cetera, and you look at this and it's, you know, it's all the more compelling. One thing is also in this pricing, part of the reason that's happening, I have to tell you, you live it, but the tenants nowadays, if they need to move, they're 100, 200,000 feet, they're 9 months out and say, well, we got to move. Well, not too many options. I mean, you know, could you give us a little more lead time? And what that means then is if there is product, if there's a shovel in the ground somewhere, they will move to that product and pay a higher rent rather than the uncertainty of a building being delivered 2 years, you know, at when their lease expires or whatever. It's harder to get the build-to-suit. Part of this is also as a practice what I'm going to tell my investment committee on the next spec project, okay? I'm trying it out on you guys because they understand it and they look at the dynamics and you look at the metrics and it all makes sense. It's still a gulp to say you're going to do $50, $100, $150 million spec office building. Cap rates, the spreads are just, they remain very, very healthy. The prime office yields, it was requested we look at stuff here, you know, around the world. Again, we have investors around the world. We don't necessarily invest with them, but when we talk with them, in their mind, they are looking, okay, do I invest in my home country? Do I invest in Asia? Which when you say invest in Asia, what does that mean? That's huge. Do I invest in Europe? You know, London, a lot of the Middle Eastern continue to invest there, or here in the U.S. You know, risk reward, that return is pretty high, but there's a reason for that. It's because it is riskier when you go to some of these other cities around. The rent growth, this just shows CBD performance in the top. If you look at the gateway cities versus, you know, your suburban or your secondary cities, where the rent growth has been. So we're finally seeing some rent growth. To Jeremy's point, we have not seen it that much. But it's interesting, in the last year in Atlanta, and we sort of look at Atlanta and Phoenix as two of the cities that are kind of late coming out of this as more of the major markets. A year ago, we were looking to do pre-lease building there, and it fell through. The tenant didn't come through. We looked at the rents and the exit price dollar per square foot. And a year later, the rents have really risen. There are comps there, and things are, you know, are improving. And this just doesn't show up too well, but the most expensive global office rents around the world in London. I guess we'll get to see that firsthand, Richard, is the most expensive. This just shows the way that rents have, economies are improving, you know, around the world. But at the same time, there is an awful lot of unrest and uncertainty, a lot of that coming out of the Middle East, that with the oil and what goes on there and their the influence, and they bring, you know, European countries and us into their geopolitical world, it causes people to hunker down and say, well, do I keep it in here or do I go to the safe harbor? And that ends up being back to the U.S. With that, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.